I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by Mood Magazine, a new international quarterly publication about music and food. For more information, visit moodmusicfood.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. Talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
All right, welcome to Snacky Tunes. That was just vibes, or as Eloise's mom says, vibes.
Vibes.
Eloise and the savoir faire. Did I get that?
Savoir faire.
Savoir faire. Oh, man. There's actually like a French speaker.
French.
in-house today. They'll be playing later on this very couch-inducing, drizzly Sunday. Before we get into the show, our hearts and thoughts and love go out to the entire Ace family. So sorry to hear the passing of Alex Calderwood, a true visionary, and he will be missed. If you guys need any additional information, you can go to the Ace Hotel blog. Sitting in for Greg today is the one and only Carter Adams. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
I'm glad to finally be here after.
This is your is your first time.
Yeah.
Welcome to the radio.
All right.
Welcome to the thing. That's the best thing about doing these shows on Sundays now. You can call audibles, like getting texts while you're walking out the door, be like, what are you up to?
It's true.
And I said, looking for a co-host. Greg is over at the Ace Hotel for the Codeathon. I'm Darren Bresnitz, and we have a very packed show today. First up, Marianne.
Hi.
How are you?
Bonjour.
I'm going to try now your last name. Fabre Lavin.
Almost there. Almost there. Marianne Fabre-Lanvin.
Yeah,
c'est
so
savoir-faire.
No. When we had Anna from Le Fooding on, we were playing a bunch of Fuanzar ID, and I was just having her say the names of the songs, and it sounded so much better.
Keep inviting French people. You're getting free lessons now.
Well, I brought Carter on because Carter is one of my friends who's both an expert in French and wine.
So you
can direct.
I didn't tell you that earlier.
Yeah.
You can
direct most questions and pronunciations to him. But Marianne is the executive director of the U.S. branch of the Sud de France development. For those who don't know what Sud de France is, what is it?
So we're sort of a trade organization that sell the dream of the Languedoc-Roussillon region. It's not only a dream, it's a fantastic region that's not very well known from Americans, but all over the world it's sort of a hidden gem. It's southern France, but it's not the French Riviera, so it's like a third of the price for anything, but you get the same stuff. And there are wonderful food and wine products that come from that region. You may be familiar with dishes like cassoulet or côte brandade, and those come from Languedoc-Roussillon, typically. And so on the wine side, we're the biggest wine producing region in the world. And something that may interest you is the fact that we're also the biggest organic wine producing region in the world, because that's a very dry and windy region. So it's easy. I mean, I shouldn't say easy because the producers are going to be very upset, but it's easier, let's say, to produce organic wine in the Languedoc-Roussillon region. In the Roussillon, there are 320 sunny days per year. So,
I like
yeah.
that.
Especially on a day like today.
Especially on a day like today.
Yeah.
Do you miss it? Do you, how often are you there, and do you miss it right now?
I'm going there for a month next month. No, wait. It's not as glamorous in the winter, I must say, though. But
it's still sunny, though, right?
It's still very sunny and beautiful, and you eat cassoulet. That's the good thing about winter.
Yeah,
one good thing.
Well,
yeah.
You drink a lot of wine and you like cassoulet.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's go back a little bit. How did you get involved with wine? I mean, obviously, being French, I think an eighth of your blood is wine. I'm not exactly sure what the percentage is.
Yeah, that's the only thing that it runs in our veins. In fact, in the U.S., the U.S. has become the first wine market in the world, but it's only 9 liters of wine per capita in the U.S., where French people drink average 45 liters of wine a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think I have most French people beat.
Yeah.
But isn't the wine consumption is down in France these days? Even if it's 45, it's still not what it used to be.
It used to be 55 a few years ago, but the government is like trying hard to reduce the
good times.
Yeah,
the vibes.
Exactly.
Those anti-vibe rules.
Yeah, it's so strange. But we're warriors, and there will be a revolution if they try to reduce this consumption more.
Wine warriors, right?
exactly. But in the U.S., it doesn't mean that people drink less. They drink more stuff, like beer and whiskey.
Sure.
Consumption of beer is 10 times consumption of wine in the U.S.
So how did you get involved?
I grew up in a family that used to make wine. really bad wine, actually, that they would bring to the coopérative. But my grandparents were very proud of it. And at the time in that region...
region is this? Mm? What region?
That's the Languedoc-Roussillon.
Okay, so same
region. Was near Narbonne, near the Corbière. So at that time, so 30, 40 years ago, the region was known to be a bulk wine production region.
Basically, while it was the largest wine-growing region, it was just sold off. The grapes were sold off to larger,
absolutely,
you know, people who would make it. And, you know, that's where you would get your big bottles in the grocery store and stuff like that.
Exactly. But then the New World came, and they became competitors to the producers of our region that were making cheap wine. And our producers could not compete making cheap wine because the labor would be less expensive always in those New World countries. Talk about Chile or, you know, a lot of South American wines. So they had to take all the bad vines off the fields and replant with quality grapes. Quality
and when did
vines.
That when did that happen?
It happened 20, 25 years ago. So little by little, that region started to make amazing wines, smaller production, and focused on quality, because this is the only way they can survive, mm-hmm, because of their savoir-faire, precisely.
There we go. Full circle.
And the tradition, and also the soils are amazing. So it's the time for people to buy Languedoc-Roussillon wine, because it is totally underrated. The price tag does not correspond to the quality of the wine that's being offered at your local wine store.
And what are the typical grapes that are grown? You know, people know Burgundy, which is Pinot Noir, or Bordeaux, which is more Merlot, Cabernet. But what is, you know, the indigenous grape variety?
There are many, and some of them are more Rhone grape. So it's going to be Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. That would be to the east of the region. Mm-hmm. And then when you go towards the Roussillon, it is actually more Grenache grape, mm-hmm, because we're closer to Spain. But there are also grapes that only grow there, like Picpoul. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, grape.
This
great
amazing
whites,
appellation, Picpoul de Pinay. Yeah, those are very refreshing with marine scents, white wines that are perfect with oysters, for example. Mm. Yes.
Mm. Don't tell that to anybody from the Loire.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm for diversity. There, you know, like one day you'll have a Picpoul de Pinay, and another day, yes, you'll have a fantastic wine from the Loire, and we're not fighting against each other. There is room for everyone, and I believe that if you're curious, you should just pick different stuff and refine your palate. And mm-hmm, that's what's happening in New York and other places where people are getting very nerdy about wine, or we're looking for weird.
I mean,
I
think that we found a lot of like ex-musician record collectors, and Carter.
Yeah,
you can really speak to this of just they've switched over to being.
Yeah, it's really
wine.
Funny. That's just how
interesting.
In New York, just like the
old
the
school.
Revolution. Yeah, people who I think it just has to do with people who are like have a kind of
categorical mindset.
Curatorial mindset as well, you know, like you go and you find something. You know, one way that I saw, I've heard it described is kind of like record collectors and labels.
Yeah.
You know, like you find a label you like, you're like, okay, well, I don't know, but, you know, there's this new thing on Warp Records and I haven't heard it, but I like all the other stuff, so I'm going to do it. So here it's like very often that with certain importers, you know, like you look at the back of the wine, you're like, oh, Louis Dresner, you know, brings in this wine.
Right.
I know there are other ones. I'll check it out. And, you know, people are going deep, especially
absolutely
here in New York.
Yeah,
super
absolutely
deep.
There are importers like Zev Rovin that you know.
Yeah.
Carter is spending some time there.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
He has a fantastic wine from the Roussillon, a natural wine called Matin Calme.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Very
yeah,
great wine.
You can find it at the Times. And
I appreciate you bringing us a bottle. Of that today on this Sunday.
I'll get you a bottle this
week. Right, okay. You're getting a case tomorrow.
Awesome. So wait, so hold on. So just back to your story a little bit. So how did you wind up working with this wine?
So I moved to New York, long story short, and I was working in advertising, and I was a friend of mine, a wine critic, told me about the opening of Maison de la Région Languedoc-Roussillon, so the house of my region.
Which, so this is actually like a chamber of commerce kind of.
It is, yeah,
and it's paid sort of for thing. By the region.
Absolutely.
Okay,
it's,
so you're
funded by the local government.
Okay. You're a government employee.
Oh, you work for the government.
Absolutely. I'm a part-time spy.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. No. But no, so.
So I, just like everyone, yeah, absolutely. And I was from the region, so of course, like a good candidate because I speak, you know, from the heart. I know that region. Very well, like my pocket. Do you say that in English?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, like back of my hand.
Like my pocket. I like that. You've been there for how many years now?
For 8 years.
So, what are the new and exciting things coming out of the region? Like, what can't you wait to see come to the American markets?
There are a lot of natural wine that now make the trip. To the U.S., you can find some at Acme, for example. You can find some at the Pines and all the restaurants that Dev Rovin worked with. And that's a true revelation. In France, and especially in Paris, people are after vin naturel. That's how we call them. And that's possible in the Languedoc-Roussillon region. Yep. Why? Because a lot of winemakers from all over the world come to experiment in the region. So it's very avant-garde. People do a lot of, you know, stuff with grapes that had not been grown in the region before. And there is a variety of soils that is unequalled. You have schist, you have sand, you have clay, you have all the type of soil you can imagine. We have like 30 appellations and then sub appellations and 22 pays. So you can really experiment and come up with new things, new taste there. So I'm always amazed at the diversity that is coming from the region, and also type of wine. You were talking about Burgundy, where you have Pinot Noir for red wine and Chardonnay for white wine. But in our region, we have, you know, about, like, mainly they grow 30 different varieties in those different appellations. So the region is big as a country, basically. Mm-hmm. It's very complex and very interesting to discover because you can't ever like finish. And we produce sparkling wine also.
Ooh.
That's actually where the supposedly champagne method was invented in the Abbey of Saint-Hilaire in the 14th century. So Dom Pérignon brought actually the method of the second fermentation to champagne. Whoa. Afterwards.
Scandal.
Yeah, exactly. So the champagne method was born in the Languedoc-Roussillon. We also have
anybody from Champagne actually own up to that?
Huh?
Anyone from Champagne actually own up to that story?
Yeah, they don't want to be too known.
Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, stealing the show, clearly.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, you are very knowledgeable about wine, and wine is sometimes something that we bring up here that is intimidating, but you also offer classes, right, at your showroom, and you have one coming up on Tuesday.
Yeah, the 19th? There is one on Tuesday from 6 to 8, 9, and there is another one on December 3rd because we're, you know, towards the end of a series of 10 tastings. So what's happening? We have about 60 people come to the showroom, and we teach them about basic tasting techniques, basic wine tasting techniques, because we don't want it to be obscure and reserved to a few knowledgeable people, because wine is really about pleasure. It's not about, I mean, it's great to have an interesting knowledge about the wine because you can identify the wine you will appreciate more, but really it's about sharing, about observing, smelling. It's very central, so you don't need to be to have a PhD in wine to appreciate it, right?
Yeah. No, you don't.
And then I guess the question would be for those, you know, if can you find these wines in Whole Foods? You know, or things like that. Like, what are some wines, you know, that people probably are passing in front of every day that they should be checking out?
You can find them at Whole Foods and in any wine store, really, and in like most restaurants too. So my advice would be to for people to ask the wine store owner the wine store people, or they should ask their sommelier when they go to a restaurant because the sommelier and the people who work in the wine store know about those wines. And if you're looking into something that's delicious and between $15 and $25, they know where to direct you in the Languedoc-Roussillon area. But a famous appellation would be Faugère,
right?
Corbière.
Yep.
Well, Picpoul de Pinet for the white. And there are a few Côtes du Rhône that are actually in our region too. So the Clairette, for example, Clairette de Bellegarde, or there are so many appellations. Mm-hmm. But the Minervois mm-hmm. is very famous because we pair it with cassoulet,
right?
Again. It's the season.
Cassoulet, it is the season, and today is a day for that.
I actually bought cassoulet beans today.
Oh, well, there we go.
Indeed.
It's time, yeah.
It was fate.
It's time, yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We could talk on and on and on, but if people want to figure out about the wine or where to take the classes, where can they go online?
So I would recommend to go to our Facebook page. Mm. If you type Sud de France, New York, SUDDE France, New York, you'll find us. You'll find the link to get the tickets to our classes and all the events info on all the events we're organizing. And in June 2014, we have an almost month-long festival.
I know.
Wait, stay tuned.
Which you did last year, which was fantastic.
Yeah, that was fantastic. With a ton of restaurants
and
events all over the city.
All of them.
Yeah, the Sud de France Festival 2014.
New York City.
I'll come back to
you. Come back? Of course you come back. You come back.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I love that jam. It's my new jam of the winter, which is here in full effect. Greg Morbido, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be back here.
Editor of Eater New York, blog that covers everything, restaurant lifestyle, gossip. Your gossip's not... Well, no, you still do a lot of gossip.
Every now and again, we get some good gossip in there.
What's your favorite juicy bit of gossip you got recently that didn't make it on the site?
What is a good piece of gossip? You know, I mean, honestly, these days, like, gossip just turns into news.
Right.
But I think kind of the most interesting story along that lines is that, like, Polino's is closing, Keith McNally's restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, and he's going to reopen it as a small French restaurant, which is...
There's a stretch.
I think that's actually going to be great because...
Yeah. There's Barry Diner.
Right.
And there's not much down there.
There's DBGB.
DBGB.
I had lunch there today. It was delicious.
It's good,
as far as French goes.
They keep it going, yeah.
Yeah, they do good stuff. I mean, I think it was... But, he sort of got in front of that story. Because he definitely came out and said, this is the first time I had to close a restaurant. It's tough to admit, but it's not working.
Yeah, he's... he did the right thing, you know? He owned up to it and talked about why it didn't work and, you know...
you mean from the get-go?
It's weird. It's like kind of the only Keith McNally restaurant that wasn't perfect from day one or something. You know?
Yeah, I mean, who
knows? At least that's how I see it.
A lot of moving parts on that one.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it just doesn't... having a named chef doesn't always work.
Right.
Sometimes you just need to be the one visionary.
But Nate Appelman is killing it at Chipotle.
He is, actually.
He is like...
No, yeah. He's actually really doing it. He's really happy.
He's really happy. He was at the James Beard Awards, and he made burgers, and it was, like, the only thing people were talking about at the James Beard Awards.
They were amazing burgers.
Have you had Nate Appelman's Chipotle sliders?
To be honest, the fact that he can bring sort of that ideal of sustainability and actually have a company behind it that can really practice what he preaches on that giant of a level, it's very rare.
Yeah. You know.
But enough about that.
Enough about Chipotle.
You are here today.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Nate, though.
Shout out to Nate. Big out to Nate. Nate Dogg.
You are here because tomorrow night is the annual Eater Awards, mm-hmm. which have, over the years, become one of the best award nights in the city, if not all of food.
Wow, it's too kind of you. I like to think that's true, though.
It's a really good event. It's a really, really nice event. And this year's theme is Southern.
Yeah, it's kind of gotten bigger and bigger every year. Like the first year, which I guess was 2010, it was kind of this small thing at Public, and it was just basically mostly industry people. And then it's kind of gotten bigger and bigger and expanded to bigger venues. And this year it was kind of like, well, you know, we have this great events team that keeps trying to think about how to outdo themselves every year and keep it interesting, especially for, you know, the food people that might have been there last year. So this year it's like there's a band, there's Ooh. A theme, the South, and they have 11 chefs either directly from the South or Southern chefs working in New York kind of doing their specialties.
Okay.
So that's like the big draw for food people is like you get to taste, you know, Hattie B's fried chicken. You know, Edward Lee's gonna be cooking there, and
by the way, his cookbook, amazing,
awesome,
so good. Smoking Pickles,
I haven't checked it out, but I know that that's like one of the people that everybody on Team Eater is really excited to have there.
Yeah,
so.
And he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's such a fun, nice guy. And he makes good food. I mean, you say in the promo video, South is having a moment, but I feel like that moment's been going on.
Yeah, it has been going on for a couple of years, and obviously we're not the first person to first people to say, wow, there's great food in the South, but...
Wait, what?
Right. Listen, it's not just, red beans and rice, you know? No, it's, there's some awesome chefs doing things down there, and we thought that having an event in New York that actually brought these chefs to New York might kind of open a little bit of channels of communication there, and maybe some New Yorkers would get to try this food without having to take the trip down south, you know?
So, I mean, but it's worth it, though. I mean, have you spent some time in the South?
No, I went to college in New Orleans. Other than that, though, I've not visited all these hot food cities, you know? Haven't been to Nashville, or everybody loves Charleston so much. Like, it's like this awesome food city.
It is pretty awesome.
And all these places I want to visit, and all these restaurants, so.
I mean, there was that great article in Food and Wine where Sean Brock went to Africa to sort of find the origin
that was crazy. Yeah.
Of, like, the Southern hospitality, the new Southern dishes, mm-hmm. which are really just, I think it was, he went to, what's he, Senegal?
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, went and found, like, the roots of, like, and they found, like, their take on gumbo and their take on that stuff. And you go, oh, right, it's African dishes, which most people don't put two and two together until you go, oh, right, we have that sort of torrid history of the things that happened in the South.
It's very interesting.
Is he coming up?
He might be there as a guest or nominee, but he's not going to be cooking there. So,
interesting. But he's cooked before in the past with you guys.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think I remember that. I think he was, it's like every year there have been kind of amazing chefs. Like, we had Andy Ricker doing Pock Pock Wings, like, a year before he expanded here. We had, the second year, we had Aaron Franklin from Franklin Barbecue mm-hmm. doing his brisket, and it was, like, the first time it had been served, and you know, we had Danny Bowien doing something for Mission Chinese, you know?
And you guys, I mean, obviously have your finger on the pulse about so much of the food stuff of just, like, since you're now in so many regions, including, like, Austin and Louisville and things like that, it's just really, whenever I see who wins the regional awards, those go to the top of my list. Like, you had Barley Swine from Austin, which is one of the best restaurants in the country, and just, you know, not the restaurant you would think of when you think of Austin, Texas.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, looking at all the other cities, there's... I think I have the number right, but there's like 29 cities or sites right now.
I mean,
including,
how?
Yeah, three in Canada now.
Montreal.
Toronto and Vancouver.
Can I go right for the Montreal eater? I don't speak French. Obviously.
Man, Montreal.
Obviously, I don't speak French.
Montreal has a serious food thing going on right now, or they've always had it.
They always have. And it's nice to see, and look, Joe Beef, mm-hmm. Pierre de Cachon. Carter and I went to a Pied de Cachon. It's delicious. And it's
we actually had a very expensive, very nice bottle of wine from the Languedoc.
Yeah.
Bringing it full.
Real full circle.
Yeah, it was
sharp memory.
It was Barral. It was so good. One of the best wines I've ever had.
This is why I don't think I'll be a wine guy. I was like, we had wine, I think. I don't even remember that we had wine, but there we are.
We had lots of things. One of them.
But it's so nice to see, like, guys outside of those three chefs. Really being highlighted and celebrated, which you can only really get when you do... Because you know anyone who goes there to do a report, like a TV thing on Montreal, it's like, well, if you don't go to those guys and go to Schwartz's, like, why are you even really here?
Totally. I mean, I guess it's this weird thing now that any city has great food. I don't know if it's always been the case or if there's something about the food climate right now. There's great restaurants everywhere.
Well, I think it's a shift. I mean, I think people used to be like, oh, British food sucks. It's like, well, maybe British food that... is trying to be other food, but if you go in and be like, this is like a British specialty, or like, this is like, you know, or like, you know, these meat pies are great, but they're meat pies.
Right.
You know. I'm sorry, Carter, I stepped on you. What were you
saying? No, it's definitely true. I grew up in the South, mm-hmm. so, you know, first 20 years of my life or more were in Georgia, and food was food, you know, and now to see this resurgence, you know, there was never places that I was excited to go, you know, like barbecue. Right. Barbecue was the good food.
Yeah.
Like, because you knew that was the one place. If you went to barbecue, everything was made from scratch.
Right.
And that was kind of like the safe bet. Everything, if not, it was like Cisco Services and stuff like that. So now it is exciting to, you know, go back, to go to Atlanta, to go to Asheville and be like, wow, there are like amazing restaurants here that rival the best stuff I've had in New York.
Yeah. I mean, to speak to that point, I mean, even growing up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, like the concept of from scratch growing up was not, not at the top of my list. Like, I was like, I never even really thought of like,
well, this is coming from a can or this is processed. Just like, we just went to restaurants.
Right.
But now it's like everything's like, well, where can I go where I know it's getting the best ingredients?
Totally. I also think there's this weird thing that, you know, Eater covers a lot of is like, you know, what's a buzzy hot restaurant, you know? Some restaurants just have this like X factor where you walk in and you're like, whoa, this place is cool. There's something interesting and exciting in the air, you know? And I think that, like, especially some of the restaurants that are coming to Eater Awards from the South, they have that, you know.
Of course.
And if they were in New York right now, they would be totally competing with all the other restaurants
right.
in New York or San Francisco or L.A. or whatever, you know. They have that buzz and excitement thing that's hard to kind of put your finger on and quantify.
Well, I think the – I mean, I hate to say it, I think Glassery in Greenpoint was the last buzzy, super hot, but – totally delivered restaurant where I was, I think the last one before that was maybe Acme when it opened, where you walk in and you go, there's like such a vibe, it's right. so new, it's so fresh, and then you go, holy shit, there's like a dozen or two dozen like industry or like fashion or whatever players like in the actual room.
Oh yeah, I live fairly close to Glassery, and every time I see some, like, I feel like I saw you on the street actually,
yeah.
and you guys, you're like, yep, just coming from Glassery. It's like every time I see somebody I know somebody, I'm like, hey, what's going on, where are you going? They're like, I'm going to Glassery.
Yeah.
On my way there now.
It's great. I mean, it's rare that a restaurant really nails it and is that packed. And also, I mean, obviously, it's relative. It's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Right.
Like, let's be honest. Like, New York, for the people that I've seen there, I go, you don't leave Manhattan.
It's part of its charm, though. I mean, it has
this
completely weird, I mean, it's kind of like Roberta's. It has this kind of amazing space, and you don't expect when you walk in that it's going to be there or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think another buzzy place out here is the Elm, which I actually just had brunch at for the first time today.
All right.
And we ordered, I was with the wonderful Jamie Feldman, the manager at Serious Eats, and we like ordered, it was great, and then we got up to leave, and it was so crappy outside, and we had like passed like two or three of the burgers that we sat back down and got one of the burgers.
Oh, man, that burger. Did you like, you liked it,
oh,
yeah?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I actually felt that without the burger... I mean, it's been a long time since I did double lunch in, like, the actual same place. But that burger, I really like brunch. The burger put me over the top. It was the comté cheese and the fries and, like, the Dijon dipping sauce.
Yeah, I had it for the first time on Friday night, like, late night. And it's weird to think of that place as, like, you can walk in there at 10:30 and order a burger now, you know?
I know.
But it's great. It hasn't, like, lost some of its – it's still a fine operation and they still give you a little – Mignard East or whatever, you know, when you start out. But, like, for $18, that's... I mean, I'm convinced I'd have to try it again, but I think it's definitely, like, a top 10, top 5 burger. It's really... It's really crazy. It's like the Minetta Tavern burger,
like,
but...
that comté cheese is just, like, gives it a funk.
Yeah.
It just... And it's a good size, too.
Yeah, it's you can hold it easily in one hand. it's not like a meat monster. And at $18 with fries, it's... You know,
I mean, it's definitely, well, yeah. I mean, you definitely have to think about it if you're going to order it. Cause
that's true.
I don't know if we hadn't had our own separate brunch, like whole order before it, if I would have been like totally full, but we split it and I was like, this is really rich, but it was a good vibe. I mean, it was actually packed. Like,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I think that place is awesome.
Yeah. What, I mean, and you know, I know that you're here talking about the Eater Awards, but we can't get you in here without talking about like what's coming up. For the next, like, month or two, what can we expect?
Oh, yeah, what's coming out? Well, I guess the big one that we're all really excited about is Danny Bowien's sequel to Mission Chinese, Mission Cantina,
Well, Mission Chinese still remains closed.
Yes, it's a replacement, not even the sequel.
Mission Chinese, I do believe, will open probably again by the end of the year. I think they're doing the thing they always should have done, which is, like, kind of fix that space, but the problem is that Soho House is going in behind that, so they're digging. So
wait, what?
Yeah.
That's going to be a Soho House.
The right behind Mission Chinese is this old synagogue they're turning into the Soho
House. Oh, the
house.
Synagogue?
So that's what I heard, that they're digging, and they're digging up in, like, anything in New York. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Here's the sad
thing.
Gotta
go
every
somewhere.
Restaurant in this city has rats in the basement, you know? It's like how you deal with it, you know, and how you keep it clean. Every... You know, it's like there's no way to control that to a certain extent. They had some bad luck with the DOH. I think they maybe need to make some necessary improvements, but I do believe they will, because it's like that place. And they just launched delivery, and I heard delivery was like they were killing it on
delivery.
Well,
I think they have. I forget what service it is, but they hooked up with this new service. It's only offered at like a dozen or so restaurants.
A caviar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For like just a flat $10 fee, right. They'll deliver up to like 59th Street.
Totally.
Which is, I mean, that's just a game changer.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
That's really just, I can imagine like how many of the like Columbus Circle, just like Powerhouse, and even like Wall Street. We're doing Mission Chinese for lunch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I loved it. Like, the day after they introduced it, Mario Batali, like, tweeted a photo of just, like, a table full of food. And he's like, Mission Chinese delivery rocks or something, yeah. You know? I was like, at last.
At last.
All these people can get this without have to wait in line, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely ways to get around waiting in line, but nothing's as awesome as the actual experience of going there.
But yeah, his Mission Cantina, it's like this weird thing where they've hosted so many preview dinners for friends. And, you know, the other night it was like Alice Waters and Renee Redzepi were having dinner there. And they met for the first time. And everybody's just going crazy for it. Mexican, but I hear it's actually going to be more like, it's just kind of whatever he wants to cook, you know?
Right.
Like, it's interesting.
I'm sure it'll be delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, he knocked it out of the park with Szechuan food.
The other one that I'm really stoked for is this place, Alonda, which is right by Union Square, which is Chris Jekyll, who was at iFiori.
Okay.
And Chris Cannon, who's kind of this legendary front of the house guy. But everybody that, you know, tasted Chris Jekyll's food at iFiori was like, this guy has great talent. He's a great chef. So this new restaurant, he's doing a Venetian cuisine, but he's fusing it with Japanese cuisine.
Sure.
Because he thinks they have a shared brain cell in terms of the way they use ingredients or something. Or he's like, oh, these two cuisines, they both respect ingredients in the same way. And he also, as a chef, used to train, I believe, Morimoto.
Okay.
So, I don't know if New York's ever had Japanese Italian fusion. Well, but I think that the city's ready for it. Yeah.
We have Japanese Jewish fusion already, apparently turned. I haven't been there, but everybody who has been is like,
Shalom
it actually
Japan,
works.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't checked it out.
I've talked to
really like it. Yeah.
It's been like, I went in being like, ha ha, and being like, oh, it's actually quite tasty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean those are good.
Schmaltz ramen. I can get behind that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
How could you say no?
I think
the point is maybe with that place is that those two chefs are really talented and they're going to make it work.
And married.
And married. Their talent extends to marriage, yes.
So I know we got to wrap this up so we can get the band on, but I just want to ask two 2014 trend predictions.
Yeah, okay.
What do we got? Let's do three things. What are we going to see the end of? Like, what is 2013 put to bed as far as trends? And then what are two things we're going to see in 2014 that isn't delicious French organic wine? Because obviously we know that is coming down the pipeline.
I think we're going to hit a wall with Latin shareable small plate things, because it's been a big, like, there's some great people that have done great restaurants like that, like ABC Cocina. It's like, whoa, it's the Latin ABC kitchen and everything's a small plate, you know.
I just ate there, it was delicious.
It's delicious.
Delicious.
And the guys from Toro are killing it doing that, you know.
Toro is awesome. It was not... After meeting Jamie and never being to Toro in Boston, I did not expect it to be like a meatpacking district.
Right.
But it works.
I think we're going to see a lot more copycats of that. I mean, there's already, you know, it's like weirdly, you know, it's hard to say why trends happen, but it's like,
money.
So Danny Bowien's doing that. The EMM Group, the Kings of the Club restaurant, they just opened like a Pan Latin small plates restaurant as well.
Right.
It's like, I think that we're just going to hit a wall with it at some point.
Are we going to hit a wall because, like, it's just not that good? Like, whatever the...
I think everybody that's doing it now is, you know, especially Toro and the ABC Cocina guys are great. I think we're going to start getting the ones that aren't very good, though. Put it that
right.
way.
Right.
And then it's going to be, like, the trend killer.
So, adios, Latin.
Maybe. Or maybe it'll keep going on forever, like burgers and, you know,
I mean,
fried chicken.
Hey, I mean, the thing about burgers and fried chicken is that it's so built into our culture that, like, I'm never going to be mad or tired of a good piece of fried chicken or burgers.
Right.
I'd be like, ugh, another piece of delicious fried chicken.
I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I think next year we're going to see probably a lot of guys that were kind of young guns 5 years ago expanding like crazy. Like the Terese crew, those guys are on fire right now. They have, like, more projects kind of lined up. I mean, they're at least doing another Parm, you know. And
oh, really?
They're doing a Parm in Battery Park City. They're doing a hotel restaurant somewhere on the Lower East Side. Ages ago, they were signed on to do something with the new Whitney Museum, I believe, by the High Line. I don't know if that's still going on.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, so I think they're one to watch.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't been to the new place yet.
Carbone?
No, I've been to Carbone.
Oh, I haven't been to ZZ's yet.
I haven't been. Carbone was great, but ZZ, like, that's a whole other level of, like...
I'm most interested about the cocktails there, because they just look crazy.
Yeah.
They're like these...
If anybody wants to take me to a business meeting and put down their card, I know a great place we can go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's, yeah.
And then finally, last prediction. Let's say food. Like, what are we going to see more food of?
Ooh. What more food? You know, the sort of Nordic cuisine thing?
More and more?
Well, we just haven't reached a saturation point with it. And I think that we're going to, like, you know, people keep opening interesting restaurants like that.
Where are we at now? We're at... Oscar, Acme, Torst.
There's this new place, Skull, that's apparently very good on the Lower East Side that kind of hasn't really had its moment yet, but everybody that's been there really loves it. I think that there's still, that's still going, you know? Well, I'll wait for, like, Danny Meyer's, you know, Stephen Starr to do their, you know, Nordic restaurant.
Or whatever it is. Or...
And then maybe after that we'll have hit a wall.
We'll hit a wall. Well, yeah. Greg, always a pleasure.
Yeah.
I'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And one last thing, if anybody wants to come to Eater Eve, which is the pre-awards event tonight at 7, there are some tickets left available at the door. So,
awesome. And where is that?
It's at Angel Orange Sands, which is on Norfolk Street.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's just church-turned-event space. But I guess going to church is always an event, so...
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me on, man.
Yeah, we'll have you back. We always have you back.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Song's so good.
We're all laughing. We're just dipping into the hamburger joke books that was brought to us today, which is we're going to get into super deep. I'm going to butcher the name again. I'm just going to say it right now. Eloise and the Savoir Faire.
Savoir Faire.
Savoir Faire.
Getting closer.
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 Welcome to Snacky Tunes. Can you tell me about this hamburger joke book that you brought? Please?
Well, yeah, the hamburger joke book is actually, it belongs to my friend Joe Shepherd, who's here with us. I don't know, it's just ridiculous, terrible humor, which...
Can I say one right now?
You don't even have to ask. Just launch, go.
So how do we know burgers love young people?
They're protein.
Oh! You just read that one.
I just read it. I just read it.
I was like, holy shit, Carter!
Wow.
Sorry.
No, but wait, hold on. What's the tagline of the book and the cover? Because I think that might be the best one.
Meaty jokes to be devoured with relish.
It's just...
That's the best.
It's so good. What year did that come out? I feel like that was the year of, like, 70s, 80s when they're like, we're putting out joke books, and it was, like, super niche.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm working through, like, this whole, like, Tic Tac hot dog.
Yeah, 78.
Yeah, right out of the money.
I definitely own some joke books. I would buy joke books and then just be like, ugh, like, rolling my eyes at every joke. This is so terrible. I could write a better joke book as a 12-year-old. And I think I started actually writing my own joke book. But, of course, I haven't been published Yet.
We can do a Kickstarter for that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Fuck the album. I got this
right,
joke
totally.
Book. Well, I want to welcome you to Snacky Tunes. We are big fans of what you do and the music you make. Tell us a little about yourself. Where are you from? What's your sign? What's your favorite type of food joke?
You already know that.
Yes, hamburgers.
Well, my name is Eloise, and the band, we were a Brooklyn band for a long time. Now I currently live in Vermont. It's electronic dance music.
What's the EDM scene in Vermont like?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Did you go to the rave?
Killing it, right?
The rave at the Ben & Jerry's factory?
Oh, my God.
I heard it was very creamy.
Oh. King of puns.
Actually, I want to take that back. I heard it was very chill.
It's totally chill.
Keep him coming. Yeah.
Collaborate.
Oh, it's that ice cream EDM joke book I've been hearing so much about. So what are you doing up in Vermont? Where are you? Burlington?
Yeah.
Town's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice there. I get a lot done. I wrote this record that just came out.
That's the slogan of town, Burlington. Get a lot done.
Well, because my social life is kind of like not as it once was, so I just, you know, do a lot of work. I'm a terrible interviewee.
You're great.
Okay, well, that's why I went up there to write this record, which came out in March. It's called Diamond Dust.
Great record, by the way.
Thank you very much. And I sort of had like an early midlife crisis. I was like, what am I doing? And I want to go back to school. So I started doing like pre-med stuff. And then I was like, I don't want to do that. I ended up working in this weird mind-body medicine lab, testing like the effects of music on the brain and whether or not it could be prescribed as a pain analgesic and blah, 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 blah. And then I was like, fuck it, I just want to sing.
Blah, blah, blah. The craziest thing we've ever heard on this show. You can describe music as like an antidote, blah, 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 blah. That's the most Vermont thing I've ever heard.
Right, I know.
Dr. Feelgood?
It's kind of cool, but it's also sort of boring. I mean, like, experiments are very cool conceptually, but actually doing them is sort of tedious. And you have to be very exacting about everything, and that's not really my forte. I'm kind of like to...
Mix it up?
Yeah.
Mix it up a little?
Scream and make mistakes and fall down. Not all the time, but...
Not all the time. So tell me about the album, Diamond Dust.
I was trying to have some deep thoughts, like, secretly in some electronic dance music. I don't know if it came off that way or not, but, I mean, some of the songs are more well thought out than others. Others are just, like, feeling the words are going along with the feeling. But, it's put out, Elijah Wood is our record label. He has a record label called Simeon Records. We're the only artists on that record label, which is kind of amazing.
You are the record label.
Yeah.
And it used to be Apples and Stereo were on. Well, I mean, he put out a record with them too. And now he's doing like, he's got a new production company It's called Spectrovision. He's doing horror movies and stuff like that. So,
oh, wow.
Are you scoring any of those?
Well, I mean, I would love to. Yeah, I've talked to him about it. And actually, it's... Yeah, he's got some really interesting... I mean, I probably can't even talk about it. But he's got some good people that are working on these, these horror movies and stuff like that. Okay, well, it's cool. It's going to be... It's exciting.
So, like, do you just have to text Elijah Wood and be like, hey, I need you to send me 150 LPs for the tour? And he'll be like, right back at you.
No, E-dubs. It's a little less like that.
E-dubs, what's happening?
E-dubs. And
I need that product stat.
No, it's more like I started my own record label also at the same time because I was like, I need to like have my, because, you know, it's called Copio. So this record came out on Copio and Simeon Records, and Copio stands for Keep On Pumping It Out, which is my attitude about life.
It's amazing. Like burger jokes, right?
Very easy to do in Vermont. Just keep on pumping
it out.
Just
keep on pumping it out. I mean, what else are you going to do?
I don't know, but let's hear one of his deep thoughts.
Okay. Oh, you mean a song?
I mean...
Oh, God. Well, like, okay, maybe... I don't... Let's do a not deep thought, and then let's do a deep thought.
All right, let's get... Okay. Let's get some...
shallow thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get some, like, Valley Girl stuff going on.
I mean, song-wise?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Something right. Like, send out, give us like a tweet. Like a fast tweet. You knew it was coming. I mean, you're set up. So
not deep thoughts with Eloise.
Yeah. No, but give us something. What do you want to play?
I think I want to do Dance Floor Destroyer first.
Of course.
And then we'll do Paralandra, which is based off of C.S. Lewis. He did the space trilogy.
That is a deep thought.
All right,
That's going deep.
But we're going to do one song first, and then we'll get into some C.S. Lewis.
Good. Okay, cool.
All right, so you're gonna stand up for this one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I am, because I can't sing.
It's fine. All right.
I'll give you some room. I'm looking over here.
No, I think I'm going to go over there, actually. That's okay with
everyone. All right, yeah, we're good. Sure. All right, so here we go. We're getting set up right here. Yeah. Who with the actual French accent wants to introduce them?
It's Eloise and the Savoir Faire.
Ooh. So much better. Here we go. Live on Snacky Tunes.
Destroy you. She's coming for you. She's coming
guys.
Wow, very good. Amazing.
I like that. So that was not a deep thought.
No, this is like a...
Going for the gold. Go for the gold.
You got it. You got it. So let's talk about C.S. Lewis then.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, where do you get your ideas for your... I mean... You know, do you enjoy both the writing process of something where that's, you know, Dance Artist Stories are very just like, we're going to go out and have fucking balls of the wall fun.
Yeah.
And then C.S. Lewis goes, all right, we're going deep on this one.
Well, I wanted to, I was actually like really interested in like why people tell the same story over and over again. Like so many religions are basically the same story, but like, you know, they call themselves something different.
Right.
And just mythology and where those... where those stories originated from. So, I mean, it's like a huge undertaking. I was like, oh, you know, okay. So the seat of civilization is in the Euphrates and Babylon and all that stuff. And like, because they had agriculture, they were able to like hang around and talk. And maybe that's where the first stories came from, blah, blah, blah. I mean, anyhow, then C.S. Lewis is really interesting because, well, not to get back to the Lord of the Rings, but the whole like, William Morris, actually, I was looking into too, because he was a buddy of C.S. Lewis, and he was doing a lot of like translations of these Icelandic myths, which is like the basis of, I guess, Tolkien's like Lord of the Rings. Like he really liked these translations, and then C.S. Lewis was a contemporary of his, and I'd always been like a fan, of course, of like Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and all those books, but I was always afraid to go into his like adult Christian mysticism stuff because I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm a spiritual person, but it's not like I would never call myself a Christian. And I actually think Christianity is really super scary. It's like the scariest one out there. So, but I was like, I'm going to just see what he has to say about, you know,
right.
This, you know, because all these, like Milton and all these authors have kind of, Dante, gone into like, you know, these major, big, these big stories. And so Perelandra is, it's his version of Venus, and it's like this water planet, and so it's his take on like female energy, and it's also a retelling of Paradise Lost, and you know Satan arrives, and it's the beginning. The descriptions are really beautiful, and so I was inspired by that, and I don't know. I just wrote kind of like it's like really loosely based on on that book, but it's not like. It's like Light and Shadow is kind of like the sort of, there's not really a chorus, but I would say that's kind of the chorus. And
do you get upset when you've poured all this thought and emotion into a song and people go, oh, it's a good tune?
No, I think that's all I want to hear,
that's
actually.
Hear.
Yeah, I don't care.
I mean, is it important for you to people to pull the same meaning and be like, oh, is that a CS?
No, not at all. I don't care. It's just for me. I mean, honestly, you know, like I want to like what I'm talking or singing about or, you know, like. That's it.
So when you're writing songs like this, like, what's the scene? Are you, like, drinking wine?
Like... Well, to be totally, totally honest, this Perelandra is really funny because I actually... I read the back of the book, and I was like, okay, cool, that sounds good. And then I wrote the song, and then I read it.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
That's okay. That's okay.
It's totally... I was like, cool.
Did your intentions match up?
And I was drunk. And a lot of the... some of the album is kind of recorded semi-drunk too, because I don't even remember. I mean, like that
red wine from the land of Roussillon.
That's exactly what I'm
while reading Eater,
Sudafrance, inspiring yes. Vermont dance records.
Yes, the blood, the yeah. savoir-faire blood, the French blood yeah. was flowing.
Can we hear that song?
Yes.
Can you jam it?
Yeah, let's jam it.
Will you just every time you say, have a C.S. Lewis reference, is the whole thing a C.S. Lewis reference?
No.
This whole song is.
The whole song is. Okay. All right. Well, here we go.
It's called Perelandra.
What's it called?
Perelandra.
Green shadow on a gray.
deep thought.
That is the deepest, partiest, jammest thought. What?
Guys.
It was great.
Okay.
What's going on?
I don't know. I'm just like clearly like dissolving into a red, blushing, weird mess. I'm like, ooh.
You sound great.
Okay, thanks, Darren.
And it's Sunday afternoon.
I know. I'm just being
It's the most low, fresh. Hey, could someone rip off a hamburger joke just so we can get the mood back? Where's that book? You got it. What? Read a joke. Hit us one.
Which burgers can tell you your fortune?
Which?
Tell your fortune. Which? Medium burger.
Medium burger.
Red one.
I did not.
Joke is definitely better with a French accent.
Yeah. And I don't think any of us saw that coming.
With a French accent.
Well, listen.
Yeah.
It's been awesome having you here.
Thank you.
And we definitely want to fit one more song in.
Okay, great.
But what does the future hold? Deep thoughts, party jams, mashups.
Oh, for us.
Yeah, for you.
We just made some, I guess they're remixes. I don't know what we'd call them, really.
Actually,
we just slowed down a couple songs and added different parts to them. It's sort of in the dub reggae sort of tradition of things. And those we're going to release sometime soon.
Yeah, actually, I think this is kind of funny because I feel like when I was younger, like, I always wanted life to be faster, faster, faster. So all the songs I did were, like, really fast. And now I feel like I'm getting to an age where, like, I want time to slow down. And so I just want to listen to slower things. So, yeah, we just slowed down. It was inspired by listening to one of these tracks. Like, it's supposed to be a 45, but we listened to it on 33. So the record was, like, pitched down and slower, and then I just basically sang over it, and I really like them. I'll give them to you.
Yeah.
To
our friend Julian, who DJed at Carter's birthday on Friday, does a pitched down version of Flock of Seagulls' "Iran."
Ooh,
that works.
Excellent. Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, some songs just are so much better. I mean, I'm not saying that I like my original versions. I just really like these also slow. That's all I have to say.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean. You love your babies and you have more babies.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Can I ask, what's your favorite Vermont food? Have you been to Bove's up there?
Yes.
Bove's? Shout out to Mark Bove.
Yes. And
okay.
Also, it's so funny.
For those who don't know Mark Bove is this guy who makes, like, classic red sauce Italian food, but really good and everything you, like, it's everything you want out of it. And he makes brick-sized pieces of lasagna.
Oh, my God. You know, and it's funny. Our friend Scott Lenhart, who's Joe's roommate, he did all the labels for Bove's. And
oh, really?
Yeah. So he made these oil paintings of the labels.
They're amazing.
Yeah. And
he's crushing it. He's so good.
The tomatoes. He's crushing it, everything.
Crushing it with tomatoes.
Wow.
Nice. Super saucy jokes. But, yeah. Bove's, what else are you eating up there?
Well, Hen of the Wood, which was in Waterbury, just opened in Burlington. And
oh, yeah.
A bunch of friends who, whatever, the Eric and his partner, and delicious. It's delicious food.
And Shelburne Farm is always a classic.
Yes.
Shelburne
seasonal,
Farm.
Seasonal,
but, like, if you get a chance to actually stay out there and eat there, it's...
Oh, my God. Or just have a cocktail and, like, look at the lake and you just hang around and pretend like you're, like, a Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I like to wear really long dresses when I go there and be like,
oh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you're just checking, like, a ticker tape of stock prices?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
I wish.
Of course. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming out. I want to thank all of you.
Thank you.
We got 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 of us in the studio. We're going to have one more song, but, you know, shout out to... Roberta's Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned. We have some details coming up. I think December 4th, the Pork Slip Tall Day guys are doing a big benefit for the Philippines, which you will hear about. We're going to do a special show in the 1st, and I think the Maharlika people are doing something at the Madison Square Garden. You know anything about that, Greg?
I have not heard about that yet.
It's happening. Anyway.
Maharlika at MSG, huh?
Yeah, that's the rumor. It's sort of like the 12-12-12 concert for him.
Cool.
Something like that. Well, anyway, thank you, everybody. Carter, thank you so much for sitting in the hot seat.
Yeah.
Again, thoughts and love and everything out to the Ace family. It's going to be a tough time, but it's going to get better. So what do we got for this last song? And how do we find you online if we want all the nuts and bolts to find your album?
Facebook. It's Eloise with an H. It's actually Eloise.
Ooh.
It's a French show today.
Are you French?
No, my mom just wanted to be French.
Close enough.
She's British, so she went to France a lot. Anyhow, we can get into that later.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's a post-show wine conversation.
Yeah, it is. It's a long one. Yeah, Eloise, H-E-L-O-I-S-E, and the savoir-faire, which is S-A-V-O-I-R-F-A-I-R-E. Why did I name it this? I don't know. But
and is it and or is it an ampersand?
It's
or?
And or ampersand. I don't.
Yeah, but I mean, social media specific in that.
I think it's and. It's with it's spelled out. There's okay. No ampersand. Right. Thank you very
there's
much.
There's Google Darren, for these things.
Yeah. That's what I mean, was like, thinking. It's, just it's Google there. It. Google it.
It's a real stickler Google. For you know, his ampersands.
Google me.
No. Google me. That could be your next non-deep thought song.
It's all about googly eyes and like.
I don't know. I have to imagine that there's some like Google me song.
There's got to be a Google Me song.
Sure.
So what's this last jam? Is it a deep this thought? Is, power
this
ballad?
This is, well, I mean, secretly deep thoughts, loosely based on the myth of Prometheus before the movie came out. And
it's a song.
It's called Vibes.
It's Vibes. Opening track to song. Full circle. Yeah, yeah. So many full circles. We have. Who's got the hamburger book? Can we do one last one? French accent, please.
Oh, yeah.
Lean into that microphone. Here we go. Last hamburger joke. Shout out to Joe. Thank you so much, as always. Hanging out on Sundays. All right. Make it a juicy one.
What is a hamburger's favorite story?
What?
Hansel and Gretel.
Oh.
We need another. It's a redo. Redo.
Redo.
Where did the burger go after the wedding?
Where?
On a bunny moon.
Oh,
man.
Okay.
I mean, you could just see the hell that is like, hey, man, we need 150 burger jokes in about a week. And he gets to 25, and he's like, no problem. Shit. And then they're like, oh, I need every – I wonder if you went through all the other food jokes, and it was just like, here's the 150 setups. You need to fill in the punchline.
I wrote that book in like – 6 hours.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. And then he did like.
Yeah. So it's like, so
1955.
So it's 78. He's got a pound of cocaine. Yeah.
Oh my god.
And they're like, we need 100 burger jokes.
I got this.
I got this. I haven't slept in 2 weeks. All right. Here we go. Here we go. Okay. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week with another awesome show. It'll be episode 175. So there we go. Marching on. Shout out to everybody. We'll see you at the Eater Awards next week. I'll be the guy in the blazer talking about food. So just find me. Okay, here we go. Thank you so much.
Snacky Tooth. In fire, I'm feeling you tonight.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.